On the 14th of October, Bernardine Evaristo made history when she became the first black woman to win the Booker Prize for her novel Girl, Woman, Other, an epic canvas on which the lives of a group of predominantly female, predominantly black characters play out at various times in Britain over the past 100 years or so. Evaristo famously shared the 2019 Booker Prize with Margaret Atwood for her novel The Testaments, and this was a rule-breaking, headline-making double award. Delighted to be speaking to Bernardine Evaristo, who joins me from Wogan House in London. We're not quite a month on at this stage, Bernardine, but we're getting towards a month. Has it kind of settled down? Have you begun to analyse and take on board what winning the Booker Prize actually means?
It's been an absolute whirlwind of publicity and great things, I have to say. My feet haven't touched the ground. I don't know when I'll sort of wake up and realise that I won the Booker, because it's just the most amazing thing. And every so often I have to remind myself that I won it. And, you know, it's brought many good things to my career, things that I've wanted for a very long time. So I think it'll be a while yet before it settles down and I'm able to reflect on this moment.
I'm glad to hear you saying, I won the Booker, not, yeah. I won half the Booker, or I shared winning the Booker. Because there was a lot of very negative comment around the time, you know, why does Bernardine Evaristo have to share this with Margaret Atwood? No comments on, you know, the quality of either book in those conversations. Everybody acknowledging that you're both great writers. You know, has your opinion around that sharing changed? Or
no, not at all. You know, it's very hard to win the Booker Prize and it's out of your control. And, you know, this is the 51st year of the prize, and pretty much every year one person wins it. So to get anywhere near it is almost, it almost feels like a miracle. And so to actually win it, even though I am, you know, a joint winner with Margaret Atwood, is still an incredible thing. And it doesn't feel like it's a lesser thing for me. And I can see that a lot of people have been upset by it because, you know, the rules have been broken for a start and people don't like that. And also as the first black British woman, they feel I should have just been given it on my own. But actually, I was given it. And I think if I'm going to share the prize with anybody, Margaret Atwood would be a great person to share the prize with, because she is a great writer and a great woman. So it feels fine to me. It would almost feel diva-ish if I were to be going around saying, oh, I should have got it on my own. This is outrageous. Because this is life. This is what happens sometimes. And it's a win-win situation for me. So I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, and I would have thought it would be one of the great pub questions, if there are literary pub quizzes, you know, in years to come. Who broke two records when she won the Booker Prize in 2019, and what were those two records? You know, I'm waiting for that pub quiz to happen, and I'm going to be there, hopefully, on the literary team at that moment in time. I think in many ways for me, Bernardine, you know, to understand this novel in some ways, and to maybe to know a little bit more about you, if we talk about your association with youth theatre back in your teens, it kind of leads us into some of the things that I think come to fruition in this book.
I think so. You know, I come from a working class family. I grew up in a working class part of London, Woolwich, in the 60s and 70s. We were not a family who was particularly intellectual or with an artistic bent. My father was Nigerian, my mother English, actually English, but also quarter Irish, as it happens.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yes. And then I was introduced to the youth theatre when I was 12 years old, and it completely changed the course of my life. My mother was a school teacher, my father a welder. It's quite likely I might have become a school teacher or something. I went to Greenwich Young People's Theatre, and it was a wonderful, safe, creative space for children to enjoy themselves and discover the arts and perform and create theatre. And from there, I then got involved in drama at school, which I loved. And then I went to a drama school, and then I formed a theatre company in the 1980s called Theatre of Black Women. And from then onwards, I was in the arts, you know, and writing for theatre originally, and then just writing, and then eventually getting published in anthologies, and then in books, and then 40 years later, winning the Booker. So I think there is a very clear trajectory for me, you know, that began in 1972 when I went to the local youth theatre.
And one of the things that I think is very interesting within all of that is, and I saw you mentioning this in one of the interviews I read that you had given, where you spoke about how different the atmosphere was in that artsy bubble, I think you might even have called it, you know, regarding acceptance of difference, the difference there between the experiences you had there and the experiences you had in a predominantly white society growing up as a young black girl.
I think, you know, it's very interesting because I think my area wasn't overly racist, but, you know, Britain was a racist society in the 70s and 60s compared to how people understand race today and how they manifest their bigotry or not, you know. So going to the youth theatre, I discovered a space where it seemed to me, certainly from my child's perspective, that everybody was accepted. And I was the only black girl there, actually, and I was the only black girl at my girls' grammar school for most of my time there. But at the youth theatre, and there were some black boys at the youth theatre, but I never, ever experienced discrimination. I felt completely accepted and welcomed. I was given good parts in the plays, and it was a mixture of middle class children and very working class children and, you know, Cockney children from the local estates. And we just all came together and created. And for me, I think the seed was sown that the arts was somewhere where you could be perhaps marginalized or an outsider or different in some way in the widest society, but that in that creative space you came together and those issues and barriers could melt away. And you just existed on a very equal basis. I mean, that sounds very kind of idealistic today, but I still think there's something of that in the arts, and it's been my life ever since.
It also the other aspect of it that I think feeds directly into the writing, particularly of Girl, Woman, Other, is that in the process of being in a youth theatre, you were going to, as a young actor, take on the voices of many, many characters, which is precisely what you do in Girl, Woman, Other.
That's right. So Girl, Woman, Other has 12 primarily black British women, and they are all equal in the novel. You know, they're all equally the protagonists of the novel. And as a writer, I like to inhabit my characters in much the same way that I did when I was an actor. I like to get inside them and to write them from the inside. And there is always a performative element to my characters on the page. And all my books, this is my 8th book, I've written many, many characters. And I feel that they always come alive in the way that characters do when we're performing them, and that is definitely rooted in my theatre background.
Do you stomp around the study then in various in various character modes?
I have done. My last book, Mr. Loverman, was about a gay 74-year-old Caribbean London man, and my husband would come home, and I would have this character's voice in my head, Barrington, and I would say to him, "Oh, hello, darling, how you doing?" And we just had this laugh because, you know, I'd been inside this character's head all day, and then that was what was coming out of my mouth. With Girl, Woman, Other, there are 12 of them, so I would say that no single character inhabited me in quite the same way. But
your husband was not greeted by a dozen different people.
No, he wasn't. But they are inside me for sure. Yeah. You know,
I wonder though, when you have a dozen characters like that, do they vie for space on the page?
I don't think these characters did, because I wrote them all individually. And so they all have their own sections. I mean, it is a cohesive novel, but they all have their own chapters. And then they appear in other chapters because they're all interconnected. You know, there are four mothers and daughters in the novel, and there's friends and colleagues and so on and so forth. And so they all got that dedicated space where they were the star of the show. So it didn't feel that I was, you know, struggling to bring, you know, one character alive over any of the others.
Although I suppose the immediate parallel that will be drawn, and that I'm sure has been drawn to up to date, and she is the first primary character that we meet in the book, the character of Amma, who was an actress and who founded a theatre company back in the 1980s, not dissimilar, I suppose, in it seems to me, in its type of flavours of pieces and plays that she might have wanted to produce, not dissimilar to the sort of thing you were doing yourself back in the 1980s.
Oh, there you go. That's true. So I wanted to write about that moment in the 1980s, which nobody really knows about, because unless you went through it, it hasn't really been recorded. And it was a sort of, we were second generation Black British women, or actually women of colour, coming from, our parents were from the Caribbean or Africa or Asia, and most of us were born in Britain, and we got together and we were creating art on our own terms. We wanted to be a voice in society. Society wasn't yet ready for us. There were very few opportunities for us. So we were forming our own theatre companies and dance companies and visual arts exhibitions and music companies and so on. And so Amma is a theatre director. She's been directing alternative theatre, as we used to call it, for 40 years almost. And suddenly she's got this breakthrough. She's got a play on, which she's also directed, called The Last Amazon of Dahomey at the National Theatre. And there is a degree of life imitating art.
It sure is.
Because when I wrote this character a few years ago now, I didn't know I was going to win the Booker. But I've definitely had that journey from feeling very much like an outsider to somebody who would be seen as more of an establishment figure. But my politics is still very radical, in the sense that I'm an egalitarian, and I believe in an inclusive society, and I definitely want to be an advocate for people of colour to have their voices heard. So for some people that makes me radical, yet I am vice chair of the Royal Society of Literature, and I'm professor of creative writing at Brunel University London, and I'm published by Penguin. So on the outside I look like, I'm part of the mainstream. But I've brought my outsider sensibility, if you like, to that. And also through my work. My work is completely uncompromising.
And it's one of the things that Amma, the character, worries about, in fact, is what is this success going to do to her? Is she going to find herself kind of becoming an establishment figure? The advice you would give to her then, I suppose, is precisely what you've just said to me. Even though it might seem like an odd phrase to use, but you're checking your mainstream privilege, or you're checking your mainstream status with every word you write on the page, making sure that you still have your outsider's voice in place.
Yeah, you're right. I think one of the things the book does is look at what it takes for these Black British women to be successful in this society. So Amma is accused of selling out because she's got a show on at the National. And she says to her friend Sylvester, who she's known for like her whole life almost, she says, well, I'm fed up of performing in libraries where people are falling asleep and there's like 10 people in the audience. And that's very much how I feel. Because actually with my last book, which was published in 2013, I did do a library. And, with all due respect, homeless people came in and I thought, oh, well, there is a decent number of people here. But actually they were homeless people and they fell asleep.
They needed warmth and shelter. That's what they were there for.
This is what she says to Sylvester. And then there are other characters like, Carol, who's in her, she's not 30 yet. She's a banker. She comes from working class immigrant stock in, grown up in Peckham, very working class part of London as was, and goes to a rough school. She's mentored by somebody called Shirley. She ends up at Oxford. Soon as she's at Oxford, she has an identity crisis. And the result of that is that she assimilates and loses her original sense of self. And that's what she needs to do in order to get on in society. And then she ends up a banker and pretty much rejects her Nigerian cultural background. So I think the book asks these questions of us, about, from a Black woman's perspective, how do you fully realise your potential in Britain?
I'm glad that you moved from Amma onto Carol, because I was thinking to myself, let's not get stuck on Amma, because the book is not just about one woman or one character at all. And it's interesting that you said, in writing about Amma, you wanted to write about a moment. You wanted to write about the 1980s, not about your experience or something, but that moment, that cultural moment, and what it meant. And I read again, you talking about the novel, that you spoke about it being an activist novel. And I mentioned
I
in
did,
my
didn't I?
Yes, you did. And you, as I mentioned in my introduction about it going spanning, you know, the guts of a century. So did you? Is that what you were looking for? Were you looking for moments in history, or movements, or cultural changes that you wanted to write about?
To a certain extent, I was, you know. So the oldest character is Hattie, who is 93. She lives in Northumberland on her family farm, where she's lived all her life. And I just wanted to look at a wide range of Black British womanhood, not to define us narrowly in any sense, because 12 characters would be to define us narrowly, but just to broaden the representation of who we are in this society. So Hattie is this farmer character. She's never been to London. She's, you know, she doesn't like the idea of cities. She doesn't like the EU. You know, at one point she was voting Tory. But she is a woman of colour. She's a woman of African heritage in a very unusual setting. And I wanted to challenge the idea that as Black people, we only exist in the metropolis. Why shouldn't we be dotted all over this country with roots going back nearly 100 years? Mm. And then there's Winsome, who I wanted to look at the Windrush generation. For a lot of people, Black Britain began with the Windrush ship that came here in 1948. Well, of course, Black British history, a lot of people don't know this, goes back to the Romans, goes back nearly 2,000 years.
You had written about that previously as well, hadn't you?
I have, in The Emperor's Babe, about a Black girl growing up in Roman London 1,800 years ago. So with this book, I do have a Windrush character, but there's only one. And she's Winsome. She comes over in the 50s, and she gets married here to a fellow Caribbean man, and then she relocates to Cornwall because he wants to live there. And then I wanted to explore what it was like at that time to leave the metropolis and go and live in a very rural place that is completely and utterly white. And that was exploring the difficulties that they faced there, because it was so deeply racist. She ends up coming back to London, has her children in London. I mean, there's a reason why people of colour live in the cities in this country. In fact, my mother, you know, my parents had 8 children, 10 years, Catholic family, obviously. And, you know, she wanted us to grow up in the countryside. But she said she knew it was going to be terrible for us, that we couldn't do that. She couldn't do that to us. So we did grow up in the city. So Winsome represents that. And then...
Can I ask you about one of the other characters, actually? Because I want to bring up an aspect of your writing that I think is important and that you've spoken about previously as well, which is this idea of writing outside yourself, or not feeling that writing about a character that or whose situation you may not necessarily have direct contact with or experience of, that is not appropriation. The character of Meghan Morgan, a non-binary character. Given that we are talking about an activist novel, to use your own phrase here, did you feel any pressures to include a character like that? Or how did that character present itself, or their self, as a theme for the book, or a person for the book?
It's very interesting. So I wanted, eventually, you know, I knew I wanted to write about a lot of women. And then I was, eventually it was going to be about 12. And then I thought that the sort of trans issue, the issue of gender, is really current at the moment. And it's something that I had been thinking about. And it was something I, to be honest, I didn't start thinking about until a few years ago. I was going to a conference in America, and they wanted you to tick your gender. And there were 13 options. And I thought, what? 13? And that was when I was introduced to the idea that the idea of gender is something that we consider to be constructed, and that a lot of people are exploring it at the moment and rejecting it. So when I came up with the 12 women, I thought one of them has to be non-binary or trans or something, because I really wanted to engage with the current issues. And so that's how Morgan emerged, as a woman who then decides to become non-binary. And that was challenging, because there is a lot of sensitivity around this area at the moment. And I it's not about getting something right, because I think as a writer I have complete artistic freedom to do exactly as I please. But I wanted to do justice to somebody who goes through that kind of major surgical, in her case, transformation. And so it did take a lot of research, and I had to write very carefully about this character, who actually goes by the personal pronoun of they. So even writing the they, so she's a she who becomes they, was challenging for me. because it just felt so artificial. So I had to find ways around that in terms of trying not to use it too much, because in terms of how I was writing it on the page, it was jumping out. The word was jumping out all the time. But through writing the character of Megan, who becomes Morgan, I came to understand at a deeper level why somebody would want to do that. So the writing is sometimes a learning process for me through my research and through thinking very deeply about it. Because I think if you're going to write a non-binary figure, you have to think deeply about it. What does that mean? Why does somebody want to do something so revolutionary in a sense?
Final question then, Bernardine. I know that girl, woman, other, this winning of the Booker Prize means that you're being opened up to an American market now that perhaps wasn't quite there to the same extent for your novels previous to this. What anxieties, if any at all, do you have around this idea that here you are with the Black British female experience that's going to be brought into America, that people might expect, well, this isn't the Black American experience. Mm. What's with this novel?
Well, interesting. I think the big difference for this book, and I have been published in America before, the big difference is that it's got the Booker stamp on it.
Yeah.
So I think people are going to pay attention to it in a way that they perhaps wouldn't have before. I am really excited at the idea of 12 Black British, primarily Black British female protagonists are going to be introduced to an American market and to African-American readers, because we have consumed African-American literature over here ever since they started publishing. I have been reading African-American writers, especially women writers, since the 80s, and it hasn't been reciprocated. Our works have not broken through there in a big way, apart from perhaps one or two names. So it's very exciting to me that they are going to come across a book that is hopefully going to expand whatever idea they have of who we are in this country. For some of them, it may be an introduction to the fact that we are in this country. I don't know.
Bernardine Evaristo has been speaking to me about her Booker Prize-winning novel, Girl, Woman, Other. It's published by Hamish Hamilton.